In our journey of faith, God often leads His people into cycles of testing, not to harm them, but to transform them. Our sinful nature pushes back on these tests. We don't like the barriers, and we're prone to grumble when things don't go our way. Today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll exposes these common pitfalls. He's teaching from Exodus chapters 15 through 17, where we read about the Israelites who, in the afterglow of their Red Sea miracle, began to bellyache. Chuck titled today's message, A Heavenly Diet Versus an Earthly Appetite.
I have found in the passage before us, verses 22 through 27, the wilderness in miniature. In fact, I see a cycle. I see a cycle of events that the children of Israel went through for 40 years. And it is illustrated here in these few verses at the end of chapter 15. There are five areas that pass in the cycle. We begin and end at the same place, only to repeat it because we don't learn from history. We should, but we don't. First of all, in the cycle, there is abundance, where the people of God look up. God abundantly proves Himself faithful, and we look up in praise. That's the first part of chapter 15, where they're singing praises, saying, He took us through the Red Sea. They're looking up. And then I have observed in the study of the people of Israel that that leads to expectation. When we have abundance, we then expect continued abundance. At that particular juncture, we are looking ahead. Maybe you have done that recently. God has expressed His grace in a tangible way, and you had an abundance of something. And if you don't watch it, you will expect the same thing as a regular habit. That's an unrealistic expectation. You look ahead expecting Him to continue the abundance. That leads, third, to disappointment, where the people of God look down. For example, in verse 22, we find disappointment. Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, that's abundance. They went out into the wilderness, that's expectation. They expected another Red Sea experience, I'm sure. But they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. That's a disappointment. Verse 24, the people grumbled. That's the fourth step. We call it complaint, where they look back. When you complain, when you grumble as a child of God, it is most often true that you're looking back to days when things were easier. Now, don't miss the process, the whole cycle. Abundance, we look up. Expectation, we look ahead. Disappointment, we look down. Get focused in on our circumstance. Then complaint, we look back. We think of those days when, oh, it was so much easier than it is today. And then God beautifully provides, so we have provision. That's the fifth step in the cycle. And we look around and see His provision. That's what happened in verse 25. They look around at God's provision. It says, He cried out to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. There God made for them a statute and a regulation, and He tested them. Notice in the last part of verse 25, He tested them. That's why they were in the wilderness. You don't just happen to move into the wilderness. It's designed for your test. Then God said to them, now look, verse 26, listen carefully. Learn from history. You could write that across the verse. If you will give earnest heed to the voice of the Lord your God and do what is right in His sight and give ear to His commandments and keep His statutes, that's obedience, I will put none of the diseases on you which I have put on the Egyptians, for I, the Lord, am your healer. It says, they came to Elim, verse 27, and there were 12 springs of water, 70 date palms, and they camped there beside the waters. I want to dedicate the message, the balance of it, to you that are in step 4, the grumblers, because the passage seems to be speaking to those of us who were there. Look at chapter 16. Here's a life-size truth of the very cycle we have just studied. God put them through 3 actual circumstances in chapters 16 and 17 that are worth our attention, at least in a brief study tonight. First, there was the test of time. Verse 1. Then, when? After they had been at the oasis, after they had enjoyed the dates and the cool shade of the tree and the fresh water from the oasis, then they set out from the oasis at Elim. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Zin, which is between Elim and Sinai. We just saw it on the map. That's a rugged territory. But notice it was on the 15th day of the second month after their departure from the land of Egypt. Time has passed. If you read with a careful eye the previous passage in chapter 15, you notice it was only 3 days before they had water. But now it's a month and a half. It's over 40 days. This is called the test of time. And they're in the midst of the wilderness with those unrealistic expectations. We thought we were through with those days in the wilderness. We were there 3 days. Why do we have to go back in the wilderness? Was their complaint. As a matter of fact, verse 2 tells us the whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. Why were they grumbling? They were looking back. That's verse 3. Listen to their words. Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Where are they thinking? Well, they're thinking back to those days when they enjoyed those afternoon siestas over a sandwich and those Egyptian bagels back in the days when there was plenty. They had all that they could ask for and then some. Sounds like your life? Let me tell you something. If you focus on the past, you will complain before very long. You will remember someday back then when something was easier than it is today, and you will grumble. Let me just give you a little insight in that habit that you and I both have. The thing we look back on was once our present situation. And back then, you look back on the previous time, which was a few years before your present. That's kind of a dumb thing to do, isn't it? Because at this very moment where you're grumbling, 2 years from now, you'll look back on this moment and say, boy, it was great back in December. Well, don't forget, in December, you were grumbling because you were focusing on November, at which time you were grumbling about your situation because of October. You see what I'm saying? We live in light of some phony past leisure or luxury, when in actuality, God is showing himself strong. We feel that because we have endured the test right now, we really don't need it again. A.W. Tozer was right. It is doubtful that God can ever use a person greatly until he has hurt him deeply. You will have very little capacity for counsel or for maturity without the deep hurts. Let me also add that the test of time is perhaps the most rugged of all. For some of you, you are in the midst of the wilderness of a test completely unlike the person sitting next to you. One of you sits there with difficulties concerning your children who are now raised and out of the nest. And you're sitting alongside someone who has never even been married, struggling with the wilderness of his whole world of romance and finding life's partner, who is sitting next to an individual totally dissatisfied with his work, and that's his wilderness, who sits next to a person completely happy with his work but having trouble with his mate. You see what I'm saying? And over the long haul, in the test of time, God is honing us. He's breaking us. He's crushing us. He is reducing us to an absolute open-arm trust where we say, Lord, I have come to the end of my own flesh. If you wish me to die in this wilderness, here is my life. Take it. I refuse to look back and complain about now. You see, the second test they faced was a test of hunger. That's in the last part of verse 3. He said, you've decided to bring us into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. They were grumbling. Well, in the hunger test, God beautifully answered their need. Verse 4. The Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. The people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether or not they will walk in my instruction. Ah, that's an interesting thought. I will meet your need for hunger, but the meeting of the need will bring another test. Have you found that true? You're in the midst of a situation, it's a predicament that you're in and you cannot get out of it. And so God says, look, I'll provide this answer. And you accept the answer, which creates a whole new situation, a whole new set of tentacles reaching out, bringing tests and trials of a different kind, but actually relieving you of the previous wilderness problem. That's what happened here. So Moses and Aaron, knowing that manna was coming, verse 6, came to the sons of Israel and said, at evening you will know the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. In the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your grumblings against the Lord. And then Moses and Aaron say, let's get this straight, fellas. What are we that you grumble against us? I like that statement. Look, we're just people along with you. We didn't lead you in the wilderness. That's God's direction. So don't complain against us. As a matter of fact, Moses said, verse 8, when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and bread to the full in the morning, realize that the Lord hears your grumblings, which you grumble against him. What are we? Your grumblings are not against us, but against the Lord. Oh, I wish you would hear that, you that are given to complaining. God is the one that has set your circumstances to be like they are. Don't blame someone else. Bill has said several times to many people, there's nobody like their former pastor or their first husband. I think that's a pretty good statement. It's remarkable how the previous individual was just fantastic. But stop and think. Would it be any different? Your grumblings are not against an individual. Your grumblings actually go right back to the Lord. Our children's choir sang last year a song that just really hung in my mind. I don't know if you remembered it or not, but boy, I do. My little freckle-faced Colleen was standing there singing it, and she looked back at me a time or two, and I thought, boy, that is a good song for me to hear. I think she's maybe singing that to me tonight. Listen to the words of it. It's called Grumblers. In country, town, or city, some people can be found who spend their lives in grumbling at everything around. Oh, yes, they always grumble no matter what we say, for these are chronic grumblers, and they grumble night and day. They grumble in the city, they grumble on the farm, they grumble at their neighbors, they think it is no harm. They grumble at their husbands, they grumble at their wives, they grumble at their children. That's when she looked at me, by the way. They grumble at their children, but the grumbler never thrives. They grumble when it's raining. They grumble when it's dry. And if the crops are failing, they grumble and they sigh. They grumble at the prices and grumble when they're high. They grumble all the year round. And they grumble till they die. Oh, they grumble on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Grumble on Thursday, too. Grumble on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They grumble the whole week through. That's convicting. Some of you actually are given to that. And you cover up for it on Sundays. But whether you're driving or having been served a meal, or whether you're planning an arrangement with someone or working with a group, you're given to grumbling. You got the gift. You exercise the gift of grumbling. The only problem is it isn't in the book. There is no gift of grumbling. There is no gift of criticism. I'm not referring to good, intelligent, and discerning criticism. I'm referring to griping and sniping and grumbling over daily situations. I want you to see that the people of God, when they were provided food in abundance, still grumbled because it wasn't what they wanted. Look, for example, at verse 13. So it came about at evening that the quails came up and covered the camp. They wanted meat. There it is, quail. Now in the morning, there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew evaporated, behold, on the surface of the wilderness, there was a fine flake-like thing, fine as the hoarfrost on the ground. When the sons of Israel saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" You see, they'd never read the book of Exodus. They had never known before about manna. Here's the first appearance. And God just brought it from heaven and settled it down on the ground like dew. And they woke up in the morning and they looked around and said, "What is that?" Now look at the answer. Verse 15, they did not know what it was. Moses said to them, "It is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat." You wanted bread? Have at it. You've got a wilderness full of it. Look at verse 35. The sons of Israel ate the manna 40 years until they came to an inhabited land. They ate the manna until they came to the border of the land of Canaan. That's abundance. But you know what? They didn't like it when they got it. Look at Numbers 11. Right quick now, Numbers 11, verse 5. Here we are in the middle of the wilderness, plenty of bread. In fact, God called it angel's food in Psalm 78. The angels brought it down and served it this catered meal every morning. It was provided. They didn't have to work at it. Here they had manna. But you know why they didn't like it? Because they looked back. Here we are again. That's why we grumble. Numbers 11, 5. We remember the fish which we used to eat free in Egypt. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, and the garlic. But now our appetite is gone. There is nothing at all to look at except this manna. They had baked it and boiled it and broiled it, put it in sandwiches, eaten it raw, cut it up, made dumplings out of it, everything you could do. There was nothing left to do with it. So, but you know what? They never went hungry. But that's the way grumblers are. They gripe when they don't have it, but when they have something, they gripe because there isn't their preferred variety. And when they get their preferred variety, they gripe because it's always a variety, and we never really get settled in one thing. That's just the way we are, isn't it? It's called carnality, if you want a name for it. When God graciously gives an abundance and it is His choice what we eat, and we don't like it, by and by the old flesh will rise up and gag on it. There's a third test back in Exodus 17, the test of thirst. And look at what it says in chapter 17, verses 1 to 3. Then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Zin, according to the command of the Lord. They camped at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Now there's the test. 17:1 says there was no water. Before, there was no food. Now they're complaining because there's no water. Verse 2, therefore, the people quarreled with Moses.
We can almost hear the grumbling rising up from the wilderness. You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll in which he's retelling the story of Moses leading his people in the wilderness. Chuck titled his message, A Heavenly Diet Versus an Earthly Appetite. Stay with us because Chuck wants you to hear from his daughter Colleen about a ministry of Insight for Living that's especially for caretakers and those who suffer. First, I want to remind you about our brand new Searching the Scriptures Bible studies. In the workbook for Moses that's in stock right now, you're guided through the same Bible study method that Chuck uses. To purchase a copy of the Searching the Scriptures Bible Study for Moses, just go to insight.org/workbooks. Well, Chuck wanted you to meet one of the leaders here at Insight for Living who's engaged with an important ministry to caregivers. Chuck, why don't you introduce us?
Well, today I have a treat for you. You're going to get to meet our daughter, Colleen. Colleen leads our reframing ministry and has done so since it began here at Insight for Living. And I'm thrilled to have you here today. And I want you to help people know what that word reframing means.
Yes. Reframing is the title we chose because it's looking at life through a different lens in order to move forward from a position of being stuck or in a circumstance you can't change to a position of finding hope and dealing with the hardships in life. We have a Facebook support group of over 500 people who are caregivers, who are struggling with deep anxiety and fear. It's just so real and raw. Oh. So we help people find Jesus in the midst of their deep, dark sorrow and isolation. In fact, I received a quote from a gentleman who watched one of the interviews that you and I did together recently. He wrote, "Worthy is the Lamb. Thank you so very much for sharing this time. I came to know Jesus through Pastor Chuck when I was 52 years old through Insight for Living. I would later attend his live services on Sunday, and I'm now 61. My life has been transformed by Jesus." Chuck and Colleen, your realness and vulnerability to share through all of your outlets has meant so much to me and the lives of so many close to me. Pastor Chuck, I am so excited to meet you one day.
Isn't that encouraging? Oh, my.
He's someone who has listened, who has gone through a deep hardship of some kind that we won't know, but Jesus met him there through you. And we're so thankful to have the opportunity because people give to Insight.
You hear from all kinds of people, don't you?
All kinds of people all around the world. Truly, all around the world.
And the brokenness is often near impossible when you think about it.
They're living a life they didn't plan on living because they're caring for a loved one. So they're often isolated. And having a voice of hope and truth into their hearts through radio, through our media outlets, through YouTube, through interviews, through media sites, it just gives them hope that if they can make it through, because we're a caregiving family, and if we can find Jesus in that, reframe that in a way that gives them hope. Well, that means everything.
Mm. I love those two words you used, hope and truth. That's what it's all about here at Insight for Living. And your donations, as they come to us, are treated with integrity and such care. You are the one that makes it possible for us to continue. And your gift reaches out to people who are broken, hopeless, and often lost. Thank you for your continued commitment to keeping Insight for Living right here on your station today.
It's wonderful to hear from so many people who have benefited from Colleen's reframing conversations. Before we go, I want to remind you that Insight for Living can't succeed in these ministries or in broadcasting these daily visits with Chuck without the financial support of friends like you. And we are deeply grateful for your generosity. To become one of our valued partners today, we invite you to give a year-end gift to Insight for Living. No matter the size, God will use your contribution to reach men and women around the world with His love and grace. You can call us at 800-772-8888, or you can give at our secure website at insight.org/donate. If you prefer to send a check in the mail, our address is Insight for Living, Post Office Box 5000, Frisco, Texas 75034. Our phone number again, 800-772-8888. And online, just go to insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us when Chuck Swindoll continues our character study of Moses, a man of selfless dedication, Monday on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, A Heavenly Diet Versus an Earthly Appetite, was copyrighted in 1975, 1978, 1981, 1985, 1998, and 2024, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2024 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.